Welcome down to the Midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland. And, of course, it's Valentine's Day. Music is in the air, all kinds of music. And some of it has to do with one of the great violinists of our time. And welcome back to the studio, James Ennis.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Congratulations on the Grammy.
Thank you.
Your second Grammy.
Yeah, that was an exciting development this weekend.
And that was for the Aaron J. Kernis violin concerto.
Right. Yeah, that's a new piece that the recording actually came from the U.S. premiere with the Seattle Symphony. So it's particularly nice to see a project like that getting this kind of attention.
And those CDs are yet rather difficult to get, aren't they?
Oh, well, I don't know. Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm,
yeah, that maybe takes a couple of months to get one.
Even. Really? Yeah. Well, that's not good. I don't know what to tell you.
We'll work on that.
Yeah, the company should not, well, I guess they didn't think it was going to win.
I'm sure there were a lot of surprises that night, most of them pleasant, though. And certainly in your case, a pleasant one. How does that whole process work, the Grammy? You know, I mean, other than obviously recording the winning disc, what was your participation in the process?
There was really no participation. I have to be honest. The Grammys are a mystery to me. I won a Grammy back in 2008, and I have no idea how it worked then. And I know I had the chance at that point to join the Recording Academy, and I just sort of didn't. I wasn't. I probably should have. And so the Grammys have remained a mystery to me. I really don't know who votes for them
or nominated
how it works or, yeah, how it was nominated. But like I said before, you know, my first Grammy was just such a surprise when they were – I was watching the live cast. I wasn't able to be at either of these ceremonies, which is sort of sad. But the first one years ago, I was watching on this live cast on my computer. And when they announced the nominees and they pronounced my name correctly, I thought, well, there you go. That's my victory. You know. And then when I actually won, I mean, it was just sort of funny because I thought, well, I don't know how this works or exactly what this means, but isn't that great? But this last time, I got to say, I was really... I was really hoping because I really believe in this piece. It's a fantastic piece, and the process of getting a commission together and working so closely with Aaron J. Kernis. I mean, we've been friends for over a decade. He first wrote a piece for me back in 2007, I believe, and so we, from not long after that, started thinking about a concerto, and then you know all the years of work getting a consortium together of orchestras to be involved with that, and then playing the premieres and the recording was never even meant to be a recording. I mean, we played the performances in Seattle for the U.S. premieres, and they have a really, really excellent in-house producer engineer who does all of their radio broadcast work. And at the end of the week, we listened to the materials and thought, well, you know, I think we actually have it. and many thanks to the people at the Seattle Symphony, both the administration and the musicians, for being willing to work together to put this out as a CD, and here we are.
and so a little bit of a surprise, but how did you find out?
I was once again watching a live cast on my phone. I was in the I was in the parking lot of the grocery store by my house, so that's super glamorous, right?
But you weren't wearing a tux for that occasion.
No, I was not. I was wearing my Red Sox T-shirt and shorts because I live in Florida. So it was very exciting. You know, I was there with my wife and kids, and they were all cheering for Dad, and it was really, really nice. I mean, it would have been great to be out there. It would have been really exciting to be around all of the. All of the fanfare of the Grammys,
sure.
But luckily Aaron, the composer, was able to be out there, so he accepted the award, and also the CD won for best contemporary composition as well. So
for him, yeah.
Right. So it was a double win, and hopefully really really gets some interest going for the work. I mean, not like Aaron J. Kernis needs that much more attention. I think that he's rightfully considered one of the great composers of our era, but it never hurts.
No, never hurts. As I implied strongly, we don't have the winning disc yet, although I think that will be coming soon, probably within the next couple of days with any luck. But we do have sort of a retrospective of James Ennis in miniature, and going back to, well, we got this in 2004, your CD devoted to works, short works by Wieniawski and Pablo de Sarasate, and for example, the Scherzo Tarantelle, which promises some fireworks with a name like that, and your pianist for the occasion, Edward Laurel. Violinist and a pianist, both of them bringing a lot to the music. The violinist, my guest today, James Ennis, and Edward Laurel was the pianist there in a performance of the work of Henri Wieniawski, and that was the Scherzo Tarantelle, which is it a particular challenge, James, to play a piece that starts right out of the gate like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky piece. It's funny. It's a piece I played a lot when I was young. And
you're still, by the way.
Well, thank you. It's all relative. then I didn't play it for a lot of years. And I picked it up again and played it on a recital tour this past fall. And yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that as it starts right out of the gate, as you say, because... yeah, your hands have got to be ready. The left hand shapes in that piece are tricky. But it's funny how a piece that you learn when you're really young. Like, I didn't play that piece. Like I said, I probably didn't touch it for 10 years. And when I thought, oh, I should pick it up again, I played it probably about 80%, like just right out of the gate. You know,
really?
It's like I
really?
Never forgot it. You know, a piece that you learned that early. Of course, the other thing was that I realized I still had a lot of early habits. You know, it was almost like looking at an old picture. It was a reminder of how I used to play and the things
sure.
that I used to do. Yeah.
So, what were those habits?
Oh, I mean, like little technical things that would not probably translate. I'm not sure if I could even put them into words, but it's... Oh, it's funny. I think we probably recognize things like that in ourselves all the time if we care to look at it. You know, the way we brush our teeth or the way we tie our shoes. These are just things part of who we are.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's part of the musicianship. Everyone is unique and in ways that are noticed to musicians in particular, but sometimes to the general public too. Well, you're in town, by the way. In case we'd all forgotten to perform the Brahms Violin Concerto with the Madison Symphony, that'll be tomorrow night, Saturday night, and then Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at Overture Center for the Arts in Madison, a program that features John Harbison's The Most Often Used Chords in this 80th year celebration for John Harbison. And also on the program, the no less than the pictures in an exhibition, the Ravel orchestration of Mussorgsky's great piece, and then the centerpiece of the concert, the Brahms Violin Concerto, which the dedicatee, I believe it was, Josef Joachim, said was one of the four German violin concertos of the 19th century. The others, you could probably guess, the Bruch, the Mendelssohn, and the Beethoven.
Mm-hmm.
And it is generally considered one of the greatest.
Oh, yeah. I think that I would say it's not just one of the great violin concertos, but really one of the great musical masterpieces that we have. I think the violin is very lucky in that most of the great composers wrote concertos for the violin. And often those pieces are among even their most special works. You know, I think of the Beethoven concerto, the Tchaikovsky concerto, the
And each of them
Mendelssohn.
Wrote just one.
Yeah,
one
yeah.
violin concerto,
and the Brahms is such a special piece, and certainly deserves its reputation, and it's a piece, of course, that I play a lot. I mean, it's one of the things a violin soloist does is play the Brahms concerto, and every time it's just such a joy, such a privilege to get to experience this music.
Well, back in the day, some prominent violinist, Sarasate was one, and Well, Hans von Bülow had some things to say about it, too. In, of course, he was a bit of a curmudgeon anyway, but about it being unplayable. And does that mean that the bar for musicianship has just risen that much higher today than it was back in the 19th century? What do you think is the difference?
It's funny because I've been thinking a lot on this subject and talking a lot about this subject in reference to this new Aaron J. Kernis concerto that I recorded. I think that there is often there's a fine line between impossible and inconvenient and unfamiliar.
And just don't want to bother with.
Yeah, sort of. And, so many of the great instrumental works, particularly concerti for various instruments, were considered unplayable, impossible, when they were written, because they were doing something that was different than what people had seen before. And I understand it. I mean, I think particularly, you take a piece like the Tchaikovsky Concerto, at the point that it was written, there are things in the Tchaikovsky Concerto that are very hard. But at that point, to someone who was an established player who had spent their lifetime playing the repertoire as it existed at that point, they would be seeing in that piece things that they had never seen before. They would be trying to put their hands into shapes that they were not used to. And, when you're learning a new piece, there's always this leap of faith that all the time and effort you're going to put into it, is it going to be worth it? Is it going to be worthwhile? Is this a piece that people are going to actually want to hear? And
that probably comes up a lot. I mean, today too, obviously.
Well, today, I mean, I really do think it's the sort of thing where a lot of times composers will write something because they have an idea of a sound they want to hear. And it's very easy for a player to say, yeah, that's not going to work. Can't do it. And then what ends up happening, I mean, and of course, sometimes composers do write things that are impossible. And it's funny because in the Brahms concerto, there are things where even a composer as great as Brahms made some fairly fundamental mistakes about what can and cannot physically be done on the instrument. I'm not talking about what's challenging, but, things that just simply don't work because of the way a violin is built. And Joachim said, yeah, you're going to want to change that. And you can even see in their correspondence, it's like the face palming of Brahms, like, oh yeah, sorry, that was stupid. But yeah, with a new piece, I think the danger is that if a performer chooses to always take the easy way out and say, no, why don't you rewrite it like this, rewrite it like that to make it more convenient, then chances are you're going to take away the things that would make that piece unique.
Yeah, that limited its edge.
Yeah, like I think in Aaron's concerto, for example, there are things in it that are really highly inconvenient. I think I've earned the right to say that. Extremely difficult, but they do create sounds that you are not used to hearing, so that makes it worthwhile. And my hope is that maybe this piece, follows in the tradition of a piece like the Tchaikovsky Concerto, where in 50 years, those types of effects are things that violinists just do. And the reason that they do it is because it's like, well, you got to do that if you're going to play the Kernis Concerto, and that's a piece that people want to hear. That's really, I can't thank Tchaikovsky enough for writing his concerto, because the things that he was looking for technically have become a part of the violinist's arsenal just because that piece was great enough to warrant the effort to achieving those things.
And some of that with the Brahms, too.
I'm absolutely.
Sure. Well, we have a comparative Tarantelle now. We just heard this Scherzo Tarantelle by Vinyavsky that James Ennis played, and now we have another Tarantelle from a source you wouldn't expect, which is Claude Debussy, that Tarantelle Styrian that you recorded at least.
I should say that I'm not actually on this piece. I don't play on that. That's a strictly orchestral one, which I'm happy to hear.
That's okay, then. Pick one.
Pick one. Oh, this is a fun recording. This is a recording I made with the Quebec Symphony Orchestra in 2000. Gosh, that's a long time ago. You know, why don't we play... Oh, I love Saint-Saëns. How about we hear some Saint-Saëns? How about the introduction and Rondo Capriccioso?
We can do that. Okay. Call that artist's choice. That's the selection that James Ennis wanted to hear just now from this vintage CD of his going back to 2000. The introduction in Rondo Capriccioso of Camille Saint-Saëns with the Quebec Symphony of Ptolemy conducting on that occasion. And now one more from James Ennis and another very recent guest with whom you have collaborated. He was here on Monday, Andrew Armstrong. And you have, a couple of discs that you've worked on.
Yeah, gosh, we've done at least half a dozen together at this point, if not more. Yeah, he's a wonderful guy, wonderful musician.
And great collaborator, too, given the sound of this. This is from a set of pieces by Richard Strauss, not so frequently heard, I'm guessing. Were they written originally for violin and piano?
No, these were... This software recording where we recorded the sonata, and this was actually sort of a present for my wife that we just went through some of the songbooks and just chose a few of her favorite songs, and I just played the vocal line on the violin.
Just right for Valentine's Day. This is the Cradle Song Vegan Lied. James Ennis, violin, Andrew Armstrong, piano. After the Vegan Lied, the lullaby of Richard Strauss, a piece called Morning, and that's M-O-R-N-I-N-G, James Ennis, the violinist, Andrew Armstrong, the pianist, and James Ennis will be performing this weekend with the Madison Symphony. He'll be performing the Brahms Violin Concerto.